From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about transportation in the region. As the populations of Brunswick, Pender, and New Hanover counties continue to swell, accommodating the movement of people and goods requires much more creativity and innovation than just widening roads or building more of them. Today, we'll explore how some transportation policymakers envision the future and how the funding game is changing at both the state and federal levels. Joining us in the studio today are two representatives from the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. That's the Regional Transportation Planning Agency for Southeastern North Carolina, which includes portions of Brunswick and Pender counties, as well as New Hanover. And it's this agency's process that serves as the basis for the expenditure of all federal funds in the area for streets, highways, bridges, public transit, and bicycle and pedestrian facilities. Laura Padgett is the chairperson of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, as well as a Wilmington City Council member. Laura Padgett, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel.
And joining us as the representative from Brunswick County, she is Leland's mayor pro tem, although I understand she prefers to be called a member of Leland's town council. And she is also vice chair of the WMPO. Pat Battleman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rachel.
We'll invite you to join the discussion in just a few minutes. If you have a question about transportation in the region, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138. We'll open the phone lines in a little more than 10 minutes. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us at @CoastlineHQR. Now, the two of you contend, as published in a November report draft by the Wilmington Metropolitan Planning Organization, which I'm going to call the WMPO now, you contend that Wilmington could complete a regional economic development and technology triangle between the Research Triangle Park and Charlotte's banking industry. You say that this area could become a place where knowledge sector workers want to live. That's quite a statement. What needs to happen for that to occur?
I think transportation needs to happen and improve. If we're going to be part of a triangle like that, and I'm not sure where the statement originated, but we certainly have an opportunity to do that, but you have to be able to get people quickly back and forth between Raleigh, this area, and Charlotte to make us a part of that triangle.
This is a report called Work Cape Fear, Expanding Commuter Options in the Cape Fear Region. And I think on your website it's labeled as a short-term plan. And it says it's a toolkit, and it answers the question, how do we attract and retain talent through enticing opportunities to get to and from work? Pat Battleman, what are enticing opportunities from a commuter's point of view?
I've been working with the Transportation Demand Management Subcommittee for the WMPO, and we have identified some really interesting ways we can start to look at getting folks back and forth to work in a more efficient, modern way, and that is pretty much centralizing our focus on mass transit and creating a ride pool, carpool, van pool way of people getting back and forth into work, as well as doing something with our buses, putting some Wi-Fi on our buses, making it a lot more commuter friendly for especially our younger group that likes to use their smartphones and laptops and what have you, rather than having to sit in traffic and just, you know, be prisoners pretty much. So and this is what we're up to.
That's a scenario that you would see in large metropolitan areas, New York, Washington, D.C., healthy mass transit systems. I don't think of the Wilmington urban area as having a really robust mass transit system. Laura Padgett, what needs to happen here for this to really become a system that people use by choice?
Well, first of all, we've come a very long way in the last 15 plus years. And some of our buses, I believe, do have Wi-Fi on them, as well as bike racks.
And these would be buses in Wilmington.
Yes.
And Pat Battleman, you're talking about a bus coming from Brunswick County.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
So in order to really maximize a lot of the potential that you just mentioned with some type of research triangle, and I have worked on that for many years, trying to improve the public transportation system. And I do think that this is partly driven by generational changes. People who are used to riding in their car and want to continue to ride in their car and want the privacy of riding in their car by themselves or with family members only. And that's been kind of the American way. Wilmington is probably typical of some other cities our size and regions with this type of population where we have kind of a split between those who really do not like and do not want to be part of using public transportation or paying for it, and those who would like to live here and who may be coming here and who are really coming from areas where they had public transportation and who want to be in an area where there's public transportation. So we have got to create a system, first of all, that where the buses stop every 15 minutes. That would be the biggest thing. You can't get to work-related responsibilities if you have to wait up to an hour for a bus to come. So we've got to get the bus stops every 15 minutes.
And what do you think? I mean, certainly there's the practical reality of being able to get from point A to point B in a reasonable amount of time. And if you have the option of taking your own car, sometimes that's a no-brainer. But what is the breaking point when people, is it making sure that buses stop every 15 minutes? Is that part of what needs to happen for people to say, I want to ride the bus? What's the resistance here?
I'm not sure I can categorize all of the resistance. I think some of it is what they call a paradigm shift. People at this point, there are not enough people in this area that see themselves riding the bus. Those that do and would like to are hamstrung by the fact that the buses don't come often enough. They may not go enough places. And it's all solvable with money and getting the public's support for spending that money is a fairly big issue. I do think that if you look across the country, you see a lot of success most of the time with referenda to add a sales tax or whatever way to pay for public transportation. For the most part, those are passing. And I think there's some indication that the citizens actually value and think more highly of public transportation than elected officials tend to understand.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about transportation in southeastern North Carolina and what's in store for this region. Joining us in studio today, Laura Padgett, Chair, and Pat Battleman, Vice Chair of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using CoastlineHQR. And Drew Jones tweets, Wilmington needs protected bike lanes with protected intersections. More vehicle lanes will not solve our woes. Is that something that's on the docket in terms of long-term planning?
It absolutely is. Planning for more bike lanes is in progress. We're looking forward to it from our area. And I know there's been quite a, well, the bike and ped committee of the WMPO has been doing a lot of work in that area. So it's coming.
And is that more than a recreational use of a bike lane? Are we talking about another option for commuters,
yes.
Laura Padgett?
Yes. And I think the community is offering some hints of what it wants and how it is and how it wants to be because the bond referenda that have been passed lately, the big one for Parks and Rec and a second one that just passed recently for transportation projects, as well as Wilmington's comprehensive land use update planning that's going on, all of those things are indicating that people aren't really interested in more wider roads. And I'm not an engineer, but there are some very sad examples across the country where transportation officials tried to fix congestion by simply adding more lanes. It doesn't work. It just creates a parking lot.
And both of you have alluded to the idea that ways of commuting, modes of commuting are changing. And we've heard about millennials, for instance, being less interested in getting driver's licenses. Pat Battleman, are we seeing that in this region?
I'm not sure we're seeing it to the degree other areas are in the country, in this region. But I do believe that that is the trend that we're looking at, that we need to focus on. The millennials are more interested in being able to get back and forth, you know, to work without needing to jump in a car necessarily.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. We're talking about transportation in the Cape Fear region with two members of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, Laura Padgett and Pat Battleman. Coming up after the break, we'll take your phone calls. Do you have a question about transportation, either current issues or ideas for the future that you think we should be exploring? Give us a call at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. This is Coastline. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking about transportation in the Cape Fear, the big concerns, how projects are funded, and what policymakers envision for the future. Joining me in the studio now to answer your questions and talk about those plans, Laura Padgett, Wilmington City Council member and chair of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Also with us today, Pat Battleman, who is a Leland Town Council member and vice chair of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Transportation Planning Organization, the planning agency that encompasses New Hanover County and parts of Pender and Brunswick counties. Welcome back.
Thank you.
If you have a question for our guests about transportation in the Cape Fear, you can give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. And we have Joanne from Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Okay, this is Joanne, and I was on a committee for about 6 weeks in the area of Wrightsville Avenue toward the college about transportation. And we especially wanted to know about bike lanes down Wrightsville Avenue, since that is the thing that's really needed. And then also they talked about how to widen Wrightsville Avenue for more traffic to flow. Now, this has not been done, and it was in 1999.
Laura Padgett, is this part of the transportation bond project?
Yes, particularly the bike pass will be. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Nice to hear your voice. Yes, the bike lanes, there are sections of Wrightsville Avenue that were included in the bond referendum that was just passed. The widening of Wrightsville Avenue, there are environmental issues with widening Wrightsville Avenue that make it very complicated and very difficult. And I don't know that I see that as a project that's going to happen in the near future, and it may be one of those roads that is best complemented with another road, not adding lanes to that one.
Joanne, thanks so much for your call. What are some of those environmental issues, Laura?
Well, if you ride along it, a lot of the places where it's two lanes, it goes into Bradley Creek or across Bradley Creek, and that's a very wide wetland area. There are wetlands on both sides of most of it. We've tried with some difficulty at times to get people across Bradley Creek Bridge with a bike path. So there would be environmental complications with widening that road, and some social issues too because of the land use pattern around it.
And we have John from North Myrtle Beach. It's nice to hear from Myrtle Beach. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. First, I wanted to say I agree with the previous comment about widening roads. I heard one traffic engineer put it very succinctly and said that trying to solve traffic congestion by widening roads is like trying to cure obesity by loosening your belt.
And, that's a good analogy.
That
I
is
like
a good
that.
One. I think that's a keeper.
Yeah. My question is the bicycling community, in my experience, seems to be divided. Like, the really hardcore bicyclists take the opinion that they have the right to share the travel lane with the automobile, and they think that dedicated bike lanes are not a good thing, whereas the more recreational cyclists tend to think that that there's a need for dedicated bike lanes. And I'm just wondering how the panelists fall on that question, and I would like to also hear some other bicyclists call and weigh in on that issue.
That's a great question. Laura Padgett?
I think it's mostly a safety issue. If we can keep the bike paths separated from the highway, people will be safer, whether they're using the path to get to work or because they are racing cyclists. Both my kids were avid cyclists and athletes, and having bicyclists share the road is the legal option. They have a right to share the road. And they want to, and they need to in many places. But the more paths we can provide where there is not a potential conflict between vehicles and bicyclists, the safer bicycling will be. I haven't heard any cyclists say they didn't want separated bike paths and take away I'll get this straight in a minute. I haven't heard anybody say that they want us to not build separate bike paths instead of marking the lanes. I think we need both in some areas.
And in Wilmington, wasn't River Road one of the first major roads to get a bicycle path? And of course, I don't know the statistics, but anecdotally,
we
hear about
very dangerous
bikers getting hit.
Very dangerous. And we have to be careful that we don't just take 3.5 feet off the side of the road and mark it and encourage cyclists where there really
which
is
what
not
River
enough
Road
room.
Is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that road needs work.
Thanks so much for your call. Jim Downey says he's listening to the program now. He saw an article on CNN Money about the Chinese seeking to build more train systems in the U.S. And he says, wouldn't a bullet train to Raleigh and one to Charlotte be great? All caps. Pat Battleman.
Absolutely. I'm with you. I think we need to identify how we can maybe make that happen. Of course, it will be a long way down the road, but it would be fantastic.
And as we talk a little more about the plan, right now there's a long-term plan called the 2035 plan. The 2040 plan is in the works, and I want to get to some of the major priorities that you're developing there. But right now, let's hear from Juanita in Wilmington. Welcome to Coastline, Juanita. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks. All the above suggestions are great suggestions, but if you want folks to currently ride the buses that we currently have available, I suggest we put up benches at every bus stop instead of making them sit on grocery carts like I see them doing at Monkey Junction, sitting on top of grocery carts waiting for the bus.
Laura Padgett, are there plans? What would you call these? Mass transit amenities? Putting benches at bus stops?
Yes, and we don't have enough of those, and I could go into all of the explanation reasons, which might come out sounding like excuses, but we do need more of those. The 2040 plan has a huge list of shelter locations in both Brunswick and New Hanover County, and that needs to be done. What provides money to build those to some extent are fares, and we need more people riding the bus to make those more reasonable. It is a chicken and egg. If you provide the shelters, more people will be willing to wait and ride the bus. The more people ride the bus, the more shelters we can build. So most things with mass transit could be solved with adequate funding, which we don't have.
We're back to money.
Yeah.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about... I'm sorry, Juanita, go ahead.
The benches are one of the least expensive things that we can do to help to increase the fares, because if you... Those are... As compared to a bike trail or compared to some of the other things, a bench is a pretty inexpensive thing.
Unfortunately, the benches can't just be stuck there. There has to be an engineered concrete pad poured, and there's more than just the cost of the bench and putting it there. So there has to be a facility for it to be on, and then the bus has to be accessible. It has to be close to the bus stop, and the pad has to be, as I say, engineered. So it seems like a quick and easy thing to do. It's not quite as quick and easy as it sounds.
Juanita, thanks for your
call. But thank you. You're right.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about transportation in southeastern North Carolina and what's in store for this region. Joining us in studio today, Laura Padgett, Chair, and Pat Battleman, Vice Chair of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send an email to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using CoastlineHQR. Beth from Wrightsville Beach, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hello, Laura Padgett. This is Beth Sedlock.
How are you, Beth?
D&D. I had a couple of questions about transportation, mostly concerning the proportion of that bond that's going to go to public transportation. And why is it that Wrightsville Beach can say they don't want a bus going down there when it's a county, WAVE is a county entity? And why don't we have sidewalks near the college? I live on Wooddale, and the kids are walking back and forth to school. There's a bike lane there. There's no sidewalk. It's the only road that connects to Wrightsville to the campus.
This is an observation that I've heard before. Is that?
I bring this up every time there's an election. I ask the person who's been on the council the longest why that street doesn't have sidewalks. We've got a lot of elderly people. I am now one of them. I'm 70 now, and I used to ride my bike a lot more than I do, only because the traffic has increased so much. It's not safe to get across the road.
Okay, Beth. Well, let's give Laura a chance to answer.
I can't honestly tell you, Beth, whether that is one of the particular sidewalk pieces that is in the bond. I would like to think it is, and I was part of the committee that picked, but it was a long list. The proportion of projects in the bond is significantly more for bike and ped and intersection projects than it is for lane and road improvements. The money may not balance the same, but the number of projects. So we are working to create sidewalks where we have gaps, and those can be financed two ways. One, through the bond money that we will issue, but we also have a capital improvement plan, and in some cases, projects are already part of that capital improvement plan. And again, there are more projects than I can specifically remember. Wrightsville Beach, you'll have to talk to the Wrightsville Beach Town Council. WAVE has tried repeatedly to get a bus to the beach, and it is their council's view that they don't want a bus, and WAVE is not likely to take people where they're not wanted. So, to be blunt, and there would have to be approval from Wrightsville Beach as a city for the buses to stop.
Beth, thanks so much for your call. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about transportation issues in southeastern North Carolina. Joining us in studio, Laura Padgett, Chair, and Pat Battleman, Vice Chair of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. The number to call if you have a question for our guests is 910-343-1138. And we were talking earlier about the 2035 and the 2040 plans, and I'm sure there are many folks who aren't familiar with those terms. Pat Battleman, what is the 2035 plan and how are we using that right now?
The plan is required to be updated, I believe, every 5 years. So when I first moved here, I started to hear about the 2035 plan, and it identified areas where we thought we wanted to be by 2035.
In terms of the transportation system.
In terms of all the different elements that go into the transportation system of the area. So there are a number of ideas that were put forth back then when that plan was developed, some of which may have we've gotten them accomplished, but some that may not have. So now we're mandated to work on the 2040 plan.
So you develop a long-range plan, mm-hmm. and it's called 2035. Is that in it referencing a year
yes.
by which it is to be accomplished?
Correct. And it's based on, the statistics or the estimates of where we're going to be population-wise and economic development-wise and as far as activity at the port. A lot of things go into making that determination of what we're going to need by 2035.
Then thinking about 2040, which is what you're working on now, what are the big nuts to crack there? What are the top three?
Well, aside from the top three, the number one issue is money.
Okay. So the game has changed a little bit from when, even just from the 2035 plan, when that was in development. How has it changed at the state level?
Well, I think growth has made the unanticipated, very rapid growth is what's now factoring into what we're just trying to work out for 2040.
So then logically, I would say, don't we expand our tax base? So then don't we have a bigger pool of money?
That depends on the way transportation is funded or not in reality in this country is complicated. And we had a cataclysmic change at the state level when Governor McCrory was elected and took a new plan to the legislature, which has been approved, and which we were all still working through the transition on that. Cataclysmic to the point that North Carolina is the only state in the country that has made this type of change in how projects are funded.
And you're talking about Governor McCrory's strategic mobility formula.
Strategic Transportation Investment Plan, okay. STI.
Mm-hmm.
We have the 2040 plan coming up, or we have the 2035 plan. Technically, the STI cannot fund anything that is not in the 2040 plan. Unfortunately, because of the way the funding is now in three tiers, which logically makes a whole lot of sense, but it's very difficult to separate and work through those three tiers. The statewide tier, which is where the biggest amount of money is, and where this region doesn't fare very well, has no input at all from the local level, none. It is supposed to be data-driven. So we're getting some projects approved for funding that are not in the 2035 plan, are not anticipated to be in the 2040 plan. And then you come down to the regional tier.
Are you saying,
and
Laura,
a local tier.
Are you saying, Laura Padgett, that there are some transportation projects that will get funded, that we'll see executed, that wouldn't be at the top of our priority list?
Yes. Yes. The MPO's authority to approve plans and to plan projects for the future has been significantly reduced with the STI. We may have a final vote. We may have a say to some extent, but we don't have enough say in the beginning of the process. And because technically the idea was to take politics out.
Right.
Life is politics. That can't happen. It isn't ever going to happen. Data is data or not. And it depends on where the data is collected, how it's used, and how it's interpreted.
Right. You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about transportation in southeastern North Carolina. If you have a question for Laura Padgett or Pat Battleman, chair and vice chair of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, give us a call at 910-343-1138. Vince from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just have a question. I've heard ever since I moved into the Wilmington area about the need to have rapid transportation between Charlotte and Wilmington and Raleigh and Wilmington. My question is, do the powers that be in Charlotte and Raleigh have the same interest in including Wilmington since we are really a competitive metropolitan area to them in their long-range transportation plans?
That's a great question. Pat Battleman, are we talking with some of these larger metropolitan areas?
Not that I am aware of. Laura would probably be the better one to ask that question. But, I think population has a lot to do with where these things are going to make out and be promoted. Not to say that we shouldn't be part of it, but...
At an elected official level, it really is not going on. I think business to business, it is. And I know that there are people that on a daily basis transact business in both directions between Charlotte and Wilmington and Raleigh and Wilmington. And there should be some type of rapid transit. And in my opinion, we ought to get a little out of the box and think along the terms of really high-tech transportation systems, some of which are invented and are out there, but no one's had the gumption to put them in place yet.
Vince, thanks so much for your call.
Yeah,
just
good question.
Briefly, Laura, what do you mean by thinking out of the box and high-tech?
People tend to see rapid transit as rapid bus transportation. And a lot of cities, Charlotte, probably Raleigh too, have rapid bus transit where it's an express ride between two particular points and the buses don't stop. But there are other Buck Rogers ideas that are out there, technologically speaking, and probably, in my opinion, car lobbies and other lobbies just don't want to see those happen.
We'll talk more about that when we come back. You're listening to Coastline here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. And with me in the studio once again, Laura Padgett and Pat Battleman of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, a transportation planning agency that includes government officials from three counties, New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties. If you have a question for our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138 or send us an email at coastline@whqr.org. You can also tweet us using Coastline HQR. And Laura Padgett, before we went to break, you were talking about some super high-tech, possibly even still in the sci-fi category right now in terms of transportation options.
Well, I think there's a whole bunch of things like that, from super high rail to Google's self-driving cars to a system that I have seen a mock-up of that actually elevates individual cars. It runs on a mathematical algorithm and uses electromagnetic energy. It takes up very little room. It's much less expensive to build than roads.
Is there a municipality that has something like this in place?
Not yet.
It's still on the drawing board.
These things take decades. For somebody to have the guts to move it forward, and as I say, to think out of the box, there are people inventing things like that. And in many cases, proving that they can work. There's more than one example of that type of transportation system. But at this point, state DOTs and federal transportation officials have really not been willing to fund that type of an experiment to see if it works.
And Pat Battleman, coming from Leland, there are all kinds of ideas in this short-term plan that this Citizens Advisory Committee came up with in terms of easing congestion, especially with the Causeway Bridge construction going on. One of the ideas was a ride-sharing program, and I looked for a commercial one just to see how practical this really was, and I found one company that has Winston-Salem listed as a possible market, but they don't actually have anything happening there yet. So Wilmington, I would think, would be well down the list. What are we doing to ease congestion and help commuters right now?
In a few weeks, the Wave Transit's going to be unveiling, or not unveiling, but promoting, marketing the North Carolina Rideshare Program. And that's why Leland has started to create, we're going to be the first ones to have park and ride lots in the Leland area. We're going to have one at Brunswick Forest, one at the new town hall, and one at a Food Lion on Mount Misery Road. So that we're hoping that this will be the beginning of getting people used to using that mode of getting back and forth to work, that is rideshare. The other thing we've done to make it more interesting and more acceptable to some people who say, well, yes, but what happens if I have to get home and I've you know, made that commitment? Well, we're going to have an emergency ride home program as well.
And what is that? What's involved in that?
That would be as you are signed up through the North Carolina Rideshare program. If you have an emergency, you'll be able to call Wave Transit, let them know that you've got to get home, and they'll make arrangements to get you home.
So if I park my car in Brunswick Forest, I'm hopping on a bus that will take me...
This is the rideshare program, the carpooling program.
Sorry, going back to the park and ride that you were saying is getting ready to kick off.
Right.
Park my car in Brunswick Forest. Mm-hmm. I get on a bus to come over the bridge to Wilmington.
You would get into a automobile. Someone who is
part of the rideshare program.
Yes, I'm sorry. I guess I'm not explaining it very well. But you would be paired as you go onto the site. You sign up. You'll be paired with other people who are going to the same destination,
Hence the emergency option in the event that your carpool people aren't ready
right.
to leave
and
the
that
same time.
There is no won't be an extra charge for that.
That's great. Dan from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air. Dan?
Hello?
Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Yes, I've got a question about what the schedule is, the update on the plans for putting in a median on Route 17. You know, I know they put in partial one there around the Walmart on Porter's Neck area, but what the other plans are. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Dan. Laura Padgett.
I don't know the exact completion date for that. I know it's an active project, so I'm speculating 6 or 8 months to finish that. The Market Street corridor plan calls for a median the entire length of Market Street.
And Janet,
that's a few years away.
A few years out.
Yeah.
Janet from Ivanhoe, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. The question I have is monorails. Have they considered, maybe you did touch on this lately, but monorails have been in existence at amusement parks, Disney World and other places for decades, and they seem to be working and moving people from one end to another. And I was just wondering if that was ever considered, monorails.
It gets considered a lot. I don't know that there are any real successful monorails, and they're fairly expensive to build. And they are buses. The system that I mentioned would have individual cars, so people could ride two or three or one at a time, and basically use a code to tell the vehicle where to stop next, and you wouldn't have to stop at everybody else's stop. A monorail is kind of an elevated bus line. I know there's one in Detroit called the People Mover, and my son lives in Detroit, so I have seen that. And the times I've seen it, it isn't being used as much as you might think. There's another one outside of Dallas in Texas, and that still lacks something that would get people to use it a lot.
Janet, thanks for your
thanks
call.
Thanks for your question.
Dallas and Detroit were once again talking about much larger metropolitan areas. And when we talk about a monorail, it sounds like something like that would be a long way off. So once again, going back to the 2040 plan and what's really realistic and on the docket in the near long term, if that's not too much of an oxymoron, what are we talking about?
I think what we've seen so far at the MPO, and chime in, Pat, with your memory of the presentations. There will be some new roads on new facilities. There will be a lot of improvements to public transportation in terms of shelters and things like that, and bus rapid transit routes, which would be express routes. there are good many, there's a lot of intersection and things like that, improvements, some bike and pedestrian. Bear in mind that the new state funding plan doesn't separate money for public transportation, so those projects have to be ranked when you get down to the funding portion, in with other roads and projects. But that plan also has to include rail, ferries, the port, and we haven't seen all of those reports yet. The staff and the citizen advisory and expert committees are still working on it.
One of the recommendations from this citizen advisory committee was to hire a full-time TDM coordinator. Pat Battleman, what does TDM stand for?
That's the Transportation Demand Management Committee.
What would this person do?
Try to pull all of this together because we have a very tiny staff. And when you're talking about communicating with the employers and those who would use these systems that we're trying to, come up with, you really benefit from having one individual who's in charge of, kind of pulling all of this together and keeping it organized, keeping it marketed. And there's a lot to it, and that's why a coordinator would really be helpful.
We do have one person on the MPO staff who spends a good deal of her time mm-hmm. on TDM, and at one point we did have a dedicated person on the MPO staff. But for whatever reasons, the time was not right, and it didn't work well. To some extent, there were expectations from the state level that were not going to work here because we're not Raleigh, we're not Charlotte, we're not that big, we're not that dense yet.
And if I may add, the members of the TDM subcommittee include people who are with the large employers, the schools, the colleges. So the input that they've been bringing to these sessions that we've had has been fantastic. How to get the students back and forth to Wilmington and on and off campus. Same with the hospital, same with PPD. We've talked about flexible work hours. Mm-hmm. We've talked about, commuting from home, or rather working from home. So there's a lot of elements that we've brought into this TDM process.
We heard from John from Wilmington wanted to reply to an earlier caller. He says he cut through UNCW on a bike path and beyond campus road, a driver almost ran him over while turning left. John says he didn't see me. He was on his phone. Once again, safety for bicyclists, is that part of what you're looking at when you're looking at developing more routes for people on bicycles?
Even with off-road bike paths, there will still be conflicts when people cross the street. And unfortunately, I have some personal experience with tragedies involving bicyclists and cars. And the attitude of drivers has to change. I'm sorry, but people on their phones when they're driving are a hazard, whether it's to other vehicles, to people walking, crossing the street, bicyclists, et cetera. But driver behavior is a big issue, and I don't have a fix for that.
You're listening to Coastline.
Maybe Pat does.
No. We're talking about transportation in southeastern North Carolina, some of the problems that officials are grappling with, what might be on the docket in the future. If you have a question, we have just a few minutes left in this show. Give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also send emails to coastline@whqr.org or tweet us using CoastlineHQR. Pat Battleman, the Causeway construction project is something that has died down in the news a little bit. I think commuters are kind of getting used to it, traveling from Brunswick to New Hanover County and back again. But what are some of the issues? Do you have an update for us on how that project is going?
It seems to be moving along pretty well from what I see. And I cross that causeway almost every single day. And I think the problem is when we have bad weather, that's when you better be ready. Something's going to happen. And it's another reason when we were talking about being on a cell phone and then hitting a bicyclist. Well, that's why we need to get them in a carpool or a bus.
And speaking of talking on a cell phone, as we all know, there is a Facebook page that talks about what's
Correct.
Happening on the Leland area causeway, how bad traffic might be, what you might encounter mm-hmm. in terms of delays. Thousands of people are now members of this Facebook page. Do people post to the page while they're driving?
Apparently so. They may have stopped for a moment in traffic and they think, oh, I'm just sitting here. So the temptation's there. They grab the phone, they tweet something or they send something into the Facebook page. And that's not what we want, but that's what happens. It's unfortunate, but...
Are you finding now that page has become a useful outlet, a good way of communicating with people in this group?
It really has. I think it started off when the work first began. It seemed like there was a traffic jam every single day, and people were really, really frustrated. And I went on to that Facebook page once it was created, and I saw these comments, and I thought, oh, my goodness. So I actually did get on it myself a few times, and there were some questions about what was happening, when it was going to, what was changing, what was needed to make it easier. And a lot of that feedback was helpful for NCDOT. They made a lot of great improvements now to make the markings on the road easier to see. And they really, I have to give them a lot of credit. They did come back and work hard to make it a little bit easier for folks. But we still have the traffic jams when the weather's bad or when there's an accident. And
does driver skill have any, does that factor in at all to how well things go along that very congested area now? For instance, people who have a certain theory about the best way to merge versus those who have other theories about how to merge. Is that a factor or is it all capacity?
I think bad driving habits is a significant factor. I do. I think that a lot of these drivers grew up with PlayStations, and they were used to playing these games, and everything is very, very rapid. And so then they get behind the wheel of the car, and they think, okay, you know, how do I get ahead? How do I maneuver? You know, and I think that's part of it.
So what would you advise people to do when they're getting on and off that area in Leland that's under construction?
It's just common sense, really. I mean, you just have to learn to be patient. You have to be alert. Don't look at what's going on in the construction zone. You know, try to keep enough space between you and the person in front of you. It's just all common sense things that we learned in driving school, really.
And
driver distraction is probably the mm-hmm. primary cause
That's
of
right.
accidents.
So
if
hang
you're
up
paying
the phone.
Attention, even if you're not a skilled race car driver, if you're paying attention, you're probably going to be much better off than not.
Very briefly, there's a third crossing over the Cape Fear River that's
yes.
slated to open when?
We don't know.
Best estimates?
Well, they are 18 months into a three-year process on the environmental impact statement, which is a decision-making document for the route of the bridge.
So we will, and that is the Dan Cameron Bridge that we're talking
right.
about.
Mm-hmm. Maybe 2018, beginning of 2018.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the Cape Fear crossing yeah. south.
The former Skyway. No, that's the fourth crossing.
Okay.
But the third?
Yeah. I think, well, they're looking at late 2017, probably early 2018.
That's all the time we have for this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Pat Battleman and Laura Padgett of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who called in, emailed, and tweeted your comments. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Join us next week when we look at film incentives in North Carolina. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison, producer Ken Campbell, associate producer Lindsay McGrath. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.